Hello friends, I am continuing with the chapters in this subject, Performance Management and Reward Systems, and we have arrived at chapter number 6. This chapter number 6 is covering strategic imperatives in performance management and reward systems. Now, what is a strategic imperative? It is about taking certain initiatives, certain steps well in advance, looking at the larger picture of the organization so that these performance management systems and rewards are properly taken care of. It's a long-term approach. And obviously, as we have already discussed in the earlier chapters, performance management is an all-encompassing process. All-encompassing, which means it's not isolated to one department or one division. It is all throughout the company it has to happen. And it's an ongoing process on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, etc. Unlike performance appraisal. Now, this being the case, this is more strategic in its content and form. So, there can't be a single performance management system wherein you take a tactical decision. You thought of something yesterday and you do something today. No, it's all a well thought out program, which runs for the full calendar year of the trainee and other initiatives. Right? So, taking that into view, consideration, let's see the learning objectives of this particular chapter to gain an insight into the key strategic imperatives involved in the performance management and reward systems. There are certain key must-haves. We must do those things to see to it that the performance management and the reward systems are taken in a proper direction. Understand the linkage of overall HRM and performance management. Overall HRM encompasses a number of processes, the human resources management system, in which we have, starting from say manpower planning, it goes through number of processes and it ends with maybe a separation process. Now all this has in the modern days become a strategic initiative. The HRM itself is a strategic initiative, which means HRM is no more seen as a add-on department or a support function. It is as much involved in the policy and the decision making of the company as a partner as the other departments like operations, marketing, etc. So HR obviously has a major role to play. Now this HR is again having a major role to play in what it drives as a partner, which is performance management system. Let's understand one thing. PMS is not the sole domain of only HR department. PMS is not the sole domain of only HR department. PMS is driven by all the user departments with HR acting as a steering person. So let us come out of the thinking, any one of you is not working in HR, who is working in a service sector, a department which is internal customer of the HR, might think that what has this to do with me? The moment the word PMS comes, you may say it is HR issue. HR creates all the systems. They create all the processes. But the driving has to be ultimately done as partners between the user department, HR and the top management. So that is something on which all the user department should be aware of. PMS that is being driven by HR, we are also equal partners in that. Right? Understand the linkage of overall HRM and performance management and understand how to align the performance management decisions with business strategy. The decisions I am taking about performance management systems. This is like training and development. Decisions like what sort of, who are the people who have to be elevated? What sort of performance parameter we need to do? Lots of things, there are decisions we take. Now, ultimately, those decisions are not centered only with the organizational member, which is an employee, but it has to match with the business strategy. The business strategy being, what are we doing in terms of business this particular quarter, this particular year? So that business strategy is working backwards. Suppose a company has got a business strategy that we want to capture a certain geography in this quarter. In this quarter, let us say April, May, June 2020, we would like to capture this particular geography. This particular area where our market share is very low. So there's a business strategy they will have in mind. And that is spelled out in the form of numerics. So much of percentage of sales, so much of market share to be captured, etc., etc. And that ultimately has to work. We need to do a backworking. And come and arrive at who's going to do it, what sort of qualities he needs to have, etc., etc., etc. And mind you, this is an ongoing thing, not a standalone HR function. So if I have to hire somebody who has to work on the quarter April, May, June of 2020, then I need to have a proper planning, the initiatives, the type of person who I'm taking, what sort of monitoring I need to do, what sort of added talent management I need to do on those things. It's all thought out in a broader structure. So suffice it to say, any business strategy that is being created ultimately waters down. It is coming down to the performance management systems, right? So we need to align them. Now, structure and contents, background and overview. We'll give a small background overview and linking HRM and performance management, insight into the key strategic imperatives, try to understand what are the key strategic imperatives, aligning performance management decision with business strategy. So taking it further, the key strategic imperatives, we have the profit and the growth in the center in this block diagram. Obviously, top line, bottom line, here it is bottom and top, it has come the other way around. Okay, so profit and growth is a very important imperative of any organization which is in the business. Now, these are impacted by four inputs. One input is cost containment. All of us know about it. Cost pull, we call it, and price push in strategic management. So I need to contain my cost. Now, cost containment doesn't mean you keep on reducing the cost of inputs. It means that you need to have cost being under a type of a system in which the cost is not too high or too low. Now, when the cost is pulled down too much, there's a likelihood of quality getting going for a toss. So the cost containment has to be in line with the quality which we have promised to give and which we have set as a standard. So cost containment is one. Now, when I say cost, I would like to extend the thinking. Cost is not only about the money part of it, but cost of other resources also. Am I hiring a highly qualified person to whom I'm paying a very big hefty amount of money to do some project which may not be that much profitable? Now, this part of it one needs to analyze. So it is a cost of the manpower, cost of the materials, cost of the machines, cost of the money. All those things we have to see that it is contained properly, right? Then comes performance improvement. Obviously, I've been speaking about it in the earlier slides. What's a performance improvement? Day after day, month after month, year after year, I have to see that my performance is better and better. Better in terms of what? Suppose I'm doing a task today in 1 hour, I should be able to have skills and competencies so that I do it in a lesser time in the future times to come. Number one. Number two, I should be in a position to take up higher tasks of a higher order by learning new things so that those also become part of my KRA and KPI. So when I say performance improvement, year after year, we must be in a position to handle senior responsibilities by imbibing into us skills and competencies which are required for higher levels. So this is the second input. Third input is talent engagement. Now, what is talent? Something that you do very naturally and you do it very well. Something that you do very naturally and very well. You're a talented person, a talented orator, a talented mathematician, okay, a talented salesperson. It comes as a second nature for you. It's a part of your personality, we can say. Now, this talent is first identified and we have a process called talent management, wherein this talent, the person has proved that this is something very easy for him to do, where others would take a longer time and may not produce a good output. This person takes lesser time and produces a very high output, quality output, because he enjoys doing it. He is engaged into the job. So that talent engagement is a very important thing. First and foremost, we must identify and spot talent. We must learn to manage it and then ensure that the engagement takes place. The fourth one is risk management. Obviously, we are talking about the future. Obviously, we are talking about strategic. Anything strategic is about the future. So when you're talking about the future, there is a certain amount of risk involved. My decision making will not be, the outcome of it will not be known till that decision is over and the action is taken place. So I have to play the odds. Then I have to take some chances. I have some backup data with me in terms of market research, in terms of past history of the organization. And with that into account, I have to take certain type of calculated risk. Now that risk management is a separate science by itself. There are risk managers in companies who will tell you that this is a percentage, the probability of a failure or the probability of success is so much percent. So one has to learn to take a calculated risk, failing which we cannot get this risk management done. So these four put together is what will be driving the profit and the growth of the organization. Why are we discussing these four? These four are related to performance management systems and the reward systems which we are initiating with the manpower, right? What are the key issues in PM in government organization? We start from the government organizations, right? Individual level, at the individual level, that you and me, we are the employees of the company, we are the human resources who are doing the day-to-day operational work which is given to us as a form of our profile, job profile, right? Absence of quantifiable targets and evaluation against achievable targets. Okay, one of the issue could be I'm doing some work and the work is not quantifiable. It can't be put in numbers. Like the lecture I'm giving right now is a lecture for say maybe 15 minutes, 1 hour or whatever time. Now this can't be quantified whether this lecture is good or bad. We can give qualitative data, qualitative information, but not quantifiable. There are many such things in industry, many such things in life for that matter, which are not quantifiable. Right? He did a good job. Now, when you say he did a good job, it's not quantifiable. Now, that good is subjective. I may say he did a good job. Somebody else will say, no, he's not so good. So, now I need to identify which are the non-quantifiable ones and learn to make it quantifiable. So, absence of quantifiable targets and evaluation against achievement of targets. If there are anything subjective which can't be measured, which can't be universally standardized, then that needs to be looked into. That's the first thing. Second thing is unclear performance standards. The performance standards are not properly set, which means there is something vague about it. Even in the performance standard setting, there could be certain things which are not quantifiable. Like sometimes in a job profile, I notice in some companies, they want a highly qualified engineer, preferably from the IITs, with a very high performance levels. Now, highly qualified is very subjective. For a small scale industry, which is just a startup, they may not want a highly qualified person. They may not want a PhD. Now, I may think that a highly qualified is PhD or maybe a MBA. Now, these terms, when they're given in a performance standard, they become non-quantifiable. They become vague. And there's a likelihood that the person who's studying these performance systems may start taking it subjectively. The X will interpret it as something different. Y will interpret it as something different. So, we need to have a clear performance standard, in other words. Third one is neglect of person job fit in recruitment transfer and lack of motivation. There's a job and there's a job holder. Now, these two come together and we have somebody doing up the taking up the function of what is to be done. Now, there's an issue called a fitment issue, fitting the right person for the right job or the right job for the right person. Now, there was a time in my HR video I've spoken about, in my book also I've written. There was a time when we used to say right person for the right job. That means the job is considered to be constant. It is right. It has been properly structured. And the person needs to be fitted into that. Like a square peg in a round hole. Now over the period of last so many years, so many decades of transformation of global businesses and HR becoming a very specialized function, we have realized that the human being is not a resource to be fit in. But we have to weave the whole work, we have to weave the whole job around the person because he is multi-talented. So today we say the right job for the right person. There is a person who's got a skill, who's got a talent of, you know, orating. He's very good in speaking. So we have to understand that around that particular talent of his, we must give him a job. This is one of the concepts that is followed in many organizations today. So here when we talk about, when we neglect, so this job, you have to do it. The person is pushed into the job. Of course, one has to learn new talents and new skills. One has to learn it. They have to do it. But many times, we know that this person cannot do it. We try to give him. Now, skills development cannot happen unless a person has got some idea about what to do and he likes to do something. He may be sitting on the wall, but he can't be in a state of distaste and total switching off of the job that is being given to him. Many instances I've seen that organizations engage a person, they give him, they shift him into another department or a division wherein he's just not having the skills to do anything. And he is not even given a trainee. And they say, come on now, find yourself, swim or sink. Now that is very, very cruel because it destroys the organization more than the individual. Right? So neglect of person job fit in recruitment, transfer and lack of motivation. This obviously leads to lack of motivation. You give me a job in which you give me a little bit of push. Even if I've never done the job before, I may do it. But you give me a job, you don't give me a push, and then you say, go, survive yourself. Some do it, but many don't do. Our generation suffered from that type of a thing because we did not have all these beautiful systems which we are following today, right? Absence of appropriate rewards and punishments. Absence of appropriate rewards and punishment. Rewards have to be appropriate. It should be commensurate, in line, in proportion to the work that has been done and the reward that that person merits. Similarly, if a work is not done, there has to be some sort of a punishment. Now, when we say punishment, it is not negative. Punishment is more of a correction. Because the correction will put the person into a responsible position. I always look at correction or punishment as a type of a behavior. That is how it has been designed, in fact. When I punish you, I don't want to punish you. I want to punish your behavior. I want your behavior to come back to the expected behavior. This is something that is not properly understood by many people, including HR people. Now, when a person is demoted or when a person is transferred to some other place because of some reason, a negative reason, that person has to be told by the HR and the concerned department, and the person himself should be having the intelligence to understand this is more of a correction of a behavior. That awareness level is lacking in people. So when a punishment is meted out or when a correction is meted out, it is more of a behavior. In my OB lectures, I always mention this, that the person and the behavior both have to be separated. We are addressing the behavior, not the person. And it's important for us to know that the person is to be kept constant because he comes out with different behaviors at different points of time, right? And hence, what are we doing? We are addressing the behavior, which involves responsible behavior. For a person to be feeling responsible for his actions, he needs to be appropriately rewarded, appropriately punished or corrected. Last one in the slide is absence of linkage of individual organization program performance. This is very common. People are doing something at the individual level. Then there is an organization level things happening. And at the program performance level, there is something different. Everything is all going in a skew manner. It's important that all of them are going congruent. In a performance management system, as a consequence, actually, we try and do this very, very consciously. What the person does is integrating with the organization, is integrating with the performance linkages. Because when these are linked, then the whole thing will have a meaningfulness. It's like what we call the butterfly effect. The flapping of the wings of a butterfly in one part of the world will bring about a tsunami somewhere else. It is written in one of the books. What does it mean? It simply means that in an organization, whatever a person is doing is affecting the organization and it goes without any dilution. I'm giving this lecture in this particular performance management, right? For one department of V-School. Now, this is used by the user department and the students who are enrolled for the program. So, it goes from here to them. When will it go? How will it go? Well, unless I am aligned with my departmental goals and the departmental goals are aligned with the institute's goals, which is in line with what the students want. If all of us are aligned, then I'm sure all of you will get what is being coming to you. There won't be dilution. There won't be I speaking some one language, my department speaking a second language, the organization speaking a third language. That should not happen. One of the processes we have learned in Principles of Management is management by objectives. In MBO, the system is based on this, wherein everything goes one-on-one so that there's no dilution, right? At the ministry or the department level, ministry or department level, funds allocated to ministers never linked with progress of work. Now, I don't know, this person has made the slides, I've written the word ministers. Now, this is true with organizations also. In an organization, the funds allocated to the managers never linked with the progress of work. Sometimes the funds are allocated and there's no accountability. This happens in government departments also to an appreciable extent. I would not like to be critical about it, but then it happens in some cases. Now, when the funds are allocated, there is no accountability, then the system doesn't work. So you keep on giving funds. The efficiency is down. In fact, they are eroding the funds. Nothing is happening. There's a deficit at the end of the day. No value addition is taking place. No profits or no sales has happened. Nothing is quantifiable. Nothing is measured. Nothing is put in paper. This is the most pathetic state we can think of. This is not an organization. This is something chaotic, right? Lack of clarity regarding purpose and objectives of the action plans. No clarity. What is the action plan to be taken? There is something happening in this world right now. A major disease is happening, coronavirus, while I'm talking to you. Now, do we have an action plan? I'm not talking about India, anybody, just an entity. Do we have action plans? Does this action plan translate into certain defined steps of activities to be done? Are we doing it or not? Everybody talks something, there's a fear, there's a rabble rousing going on. And at the end of the day, action plan must be there. It is there, and that action plan is not properly understood. Right? So we have to know one thing, that whenever we are doing something of this dimension, very larger dimension, there has to be one point, a responsible body, a qualified body, accredited body, which says that this is to be done and we must follow that. Unfortunately, many of us, because of the way we are thinking and designed ourselves on our own, we try to follow multiple things and we land up doing unproductive work. We mess up the whole thing. So in an organization also, there has to be a certain type of regulatory measure by which we have action plans or even strategies. Only one single reliable person, like a book, like a manual, you should have something that is a reference point. It becomes easier for everybody to follow that and that and that and nothing alone, nothing else. Right? No appropriate performance indicators defined inability to measure performance. So there are times when the performance indicators themselves are not defined because it's a very weak PMS, this type of a PMS. It doesn't have much of, nobody has done a research, nobody has gone into the nitty-gritty, understood the whole PMS system itself, the philosophy. Then this is bound to happen. You may have a system which doesn't have any performance indicators. Even if the performance indicators are there, they would be subjective, not objective. See, friends, remember one thing. As far as this subject is concerned, this topic is concerned, you must try and convert everything that is not measurable into measurable. Today in the modern HR practices, there are books and there are bodies, there are institutes which are training you how to convert an intangible into a tangible. The effort I'm putting right now, for example, I'm being paid X amount of money, right? And X amount of money is being paid to me. That is my compensation, my reward system, right? Now, this effort has to be measured in terms of quality, in terms of deliverables, in terms of so many things which can't be measured. Now, through certain mathematical models, those of you who are very deep into HR, I'm sure you know about it. We are trying to link the intangible with the tangible. Thereby, we are trying to bring about some correlation. So 1 hour of my effort will be so much to the organization. It will cost so much to the organization and they'll pay back something in return to me as a reward. So these quantifiables are slowly happening. By and by, remember one thing, it has to become quantifiable. Otherwise, the PMS system will have its own question mark. People will start doubting it. Because the moment it makes subjective, things become different. And human beings are subjective when it comes to appraising others. Unfortunately, we all have our biases. And in the bias, you know, we'll try to take a figure and we'll try to give us a bias and then we put it down to the employee who's being appraised. That is very dangerous. And that is why appraisals are taken not very well by many people. Only for this reason, quantifiable is not there. Those of you who have faced appraisal, who are facing appraisal, who are appraisers themselves, please realize one thing, that when you're appraising, focus on the quantifiables primarily, because that is where the KPIs and the KRAs are. The rest of it is all subjective. I may not like my employee because of his behavior, but he's performed. He's good in this thing. It is my personal hatred towards him, personal dislike towards him. This might happen. Now, in a performance management system, these things have to be understood. They have to be addressed also. It is not just one single small thing. I may have a very good performer who is actually contributing to the larger interest of the company. Just because I have a problem with him, he may not get motivated by me. And if he doesn't get motivated by me, what happens? He leaves the company. The company has lost a good talent. This is happening in many organizations today. Not one or two, many. Talent is there in the marketplace, job market, but it's not available at the right time, at the right organization, at the right slot. I'm seeing this happening every day. Now we talk about public enterprise level. Again, bullet point number one says most PSEs, public sector enterprise, rated good despite declining performance. Now, declining performance is not about only top line, bottom line. It's not about measurables alone. It is about how they are servicing the customer. The quality of their service, the quality of the goods they produce and people who are using it. Now, when we talk about performance management, we are talking about the overall performance, quality as well as quantity. So there are organizations, public sector undertakings, which are having very good performance in terms of bottom line, top line. No doubt. But the declining performance is because they are not really serving the customer and the nation in the way it is supposed to be served. There are many such PSEs. Now, this is one of the areas where the public, where the performance management systems have to be properly relooked into by realigning the way these organizations work. Merely making profits is no more glamorous. Making profits and also retaining customers and giving them what they want is performance. Right? The second point is tendency to show profits in the short run, sacrificing long-term interests. Very common thing. The March year ending is coming. So people start rushing or they say make profits and do some shortcut here and there and then make the bottom line appear to be very, very attractive. Now, by doing this, what is happening? The larger interest of the company, the brand value, the quality, everything goes for a toss. Now, ensure that this is not happening. Now, if this is happening, that means the people who are working there have not been properly monitored on the PMS systems. Because if the PMS is in place, if it's going very, very properly, systematically, very diligently, then year-end pressure or no year-end pressure, as in this example, or anything that is happening, the short term is not given that much weightage as a long term. There are times when the company has to take a back step, service a customer at an extra cost because they want to retain the customer. Now, if it's a short term approach, they'll say, okay, fine, we can't afford to service you now. I'm sorry, take it or leave it. Now, that is a short term approach wherein you're saving your profits for today, but you're losing a customer forever. Right? Lack of scope for true negotiation. What is the negotiation? You want something and even I want something, but we can only have part of it. I can have a part of it. You can have a part of it. Now, this is very common in organizations wherein the negotiation between two departments or two bodies or two divisions is lacking. Usually what happens is there's a, by default, more than by design, one department gets more favored than the other. Nobody does it deliberately, but then it just happens because of this type of a thing. So in a true negotiation, there is a negotiator, a third party, who sits together with both the parties A and B, and then they start discussing and arriving at some viability thing where both are into a no-win, no-lose situation. Right? The last one is no accountability at lower levels. At the lowest level of working, if the accountability level is very low, since they are down below, people don't monitor them, they come and go whenever they want to come and go, they perform something, they report wrong things. If there's no accountability at the lower level, that affects the PMS system. Okay? At the program or the project level, on a day-to-day basis, on a periodic basis, we work on projects and we work on programs. Now, these programs is other than what are the things that are the key issues. Number one is focus on inputs and process compliance while neglecting outcomes and impacts. Compliance, very important word. I've set a certain process of doing things, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Each of them is having a certain type of a quality input. Even if we talk about TQM, total quality management. So everything has to be done in a certain qualitative way as laid down by the company's quality sheet. Now, the point is that there are times when people undercut on the quality and they keep doing things faster for whatever reasons. Now, focus on inputs and process compliance while neglecting outcomes and impacts. Now, if you do only that, if you are only into looking at the gains and neglecting quality, or you're doing the other way around, only being quality compliant and neglecting the outcome of the of what has to happen, both sides are two extremes. Now, we must learn to be in the center, mix quality with delivery and proper manufacturing or proper service. Very important, right? Lack of measurable indicators. When you can't measure something at the project level, the project team is working and we need to measure the how the project team is progressing in terms of its own growth in the project. Now, we typically, all of us have learned about PERT CPM charts, you know, project evaluation review technique, and CPM is critical path method. These charts we have learned about. Now, that is one tool which needs to be used to understand how the project is going further. How much of resources have been spent? How much of resources extra we need? Where are we getting stuck up? Now, that is a measure that actually measures not only qualitative, but also quantitative. Suffice it to say, a PERT CPM could be a part of a PMS system to understand how it's going. Right? Last one, a dichotomy between plans and budgets. Dichotomy means two different ways of looking at the both thing. There's a dichotomy in the plans and budgets. Budgets are given late at the beginning of the year. What about plans? Plans are happening on a periodic basis. When we are into action, we go into plans. Budget says 100 crores to be made for the full year. and the plans are not in line with the budgets. There is a dichotomy. There is something that happens. Plans are running faster. Plans have to be action-oriented. And plans are always based on the availability of resources on a periodic basis. Now, is there a congruence? There has to be some congruence. I may not clock 100 crores means I may not get achieved. Pakka 100 crores. But if 100 crores become 50 crores, there is something wrong either with my budgeting or with my planning. A PMS will not allow this thing to happen. A PMS will be chalked out in such a way that we'll be first deciding, is it 100 crores? Then if it's 100 crores, what are we supposed to do? Go backwards, work out the entire PMS system. As I'm talking to you, do you realize how important the PMS is? It is as strategic as a strategic management of any department. Okay? Now, this is a beautiful table which gives you how these are all interlinked. HM strategy is the first one which you can see there. Okay. And this HM strategy, under that there are differentiation, innovation, focus and cost. Innovation, quality and cost reduction. That is a HRM strategy. That leads to the practice in which I have to select, train, appraisals, reward, job design, involvement, status and security. That leads to an outcome of commitment, quality and flexibility in the people who are working there. Behavioral outcomes and efforts, motivation, cooperation, involvement, organization, citizenship. Organization citizenship means what? The person feels proud to be a part of the organization. There's a belonging. It's an organization culture. Certain companies, you know, people would like to work there for a lifetime. That's organization citizenship. I'm a citizen of this organization. And he walks around proudly saying that I belong to this organization, because that's the type of belonging which he gets because of his fulfillment, right? That leads to the HRM outcome. What is the HRM outcome? Now this comes to HRM back again. Outcome is what? Commitment, quality and flexibility. And then that again further HRM outcome is commitment, quality. There's a repetition here. Okay, it ends here, right? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how it is, right? Now what is this trying to say? This says that the moment I understand the strategy of the organization, I convert it to HRM strategy, then I know the HRM practices to be put into plan, then that results in an HRM outcome through a behavior, and it also results into another behavior. Now, if an input is given to me, I have to behave in a certain way so that the output comes out, right? So when I do this again and again, my behavior itself will be such that it is aligned with the company's strategies. Okay? Insight into key strategic imperatives. Tactical and transactional aspect overshadows its strategic role in many organizations. I've already mentioned this, it's a repetition. Tactical and transactional means at the very lower level, every day on a daily day basis, we take some tactical decisions. A tactical decision is one which is taken at the moment because of things not going as per plan. I have to immediately take a tactical decision of doing something because I don't have this resource. If I'm a theoretician, I'll wait for the resource and I'll be wasting my time and the organization's goals will not be achieved. But practical considerations dictate that in every strategy, there is always a tactical decision you need to take. And these tactical decisions and transactional aspect, transaction means what? It's about between two people or two bodies, there is a give and take. So in every tactical decision, there is bound to be a certain amount of transactional aspect. They overshadow the strategic in many organizations. Now, I do something tactically for the time being. I want to make do. A delivery of a particular material has to go outside the factory to a customer because he wants it very, very, very urgently. So, I've seen this happening in many manufacturing units. Tactically, the godown person will clear it because he's under pressure from the production people and the marketing people. It goes to the factory. It goes to the customer, the client's location. But the paperwork is not done. And the paperwork is not done. Later on, he may do it, he may not do it, but there'll be a chink in the armor. If he doesn't do it, the probability of that is more. What will happen is this paperwork will become people wondering what happened to that material. Where did it go? Because he didn't update it. He took a tactical decision under pressure to retain the customer. Several such tactical decisions, when they're taken together, you'll find that you are having a lot of lacuna in the whole system which you're operating on. So, the strategics create certain type of plans, some initiatives. We have to follow that. And without the paperwork, without those things, this godown person should not have let the material go. And even if it has gone, promptly he should have updated it, which he might have not done. Now, this is just one small tiny example I'm giving you. There are many, many such examples I've come across in my working life. And I see this even today as a trainer when I'm coaching and consulting with certain companies, right? Overlooks the to leverage the power of performance management as business management tool that aligns decision-making differentially across various roles. Reflects the unique aspect of business model, culture, and considers the risk profile of the industry. No economic value generation. Very, very long-worded thing. In short, it simply means that the organization needs to value the PMS as much as it values the profit-making parts of the company. Profits are visibly seen, so many companies, many managers, many top management people, they value that more than a PMS which appears invisible. Now, that has to be given equal weightage. And its implication, which goes through different roles and different goals of different sections, has to be appreciated. There has to be a group of people who actually study, who are with the performance management system from start to finish and all around the cyclical journey. It's very important because they have to monitor it. It has to be done very, very optimistically, and it has to be done with the idea that you need to validate PMS. Because if that is taken for granted, PMS, chalo, it's being done by HR, do something, fill up some papers, it doesn't work that way. Okay? Key PM activities not aligned with the company's vision and business model. Fail to consider industry's risk and performance tolerance. So when the key PMS activities are not aligned, not in line with the company's vision and business model, we have a problem. I've already explained this in many earlier slides, earlier chapters. It fails to consider industry risk and performance tolerance. Right? Aligning PM decisions with business strategy, key cultural attributes. Efficiency. It seeks to attract and retain talents that is productive, optimizing processes, technology and resources. It values top-down goal setting and quantitative performance metrics. It's not only top-down, it is bottom-up also. I would like to add this. A performance management system is a two-way traffic, top-down and bottom-up. And what it does is, it puts quantitative performance metrics. Quantitative performance metrics means, whatever performance we are doing, each one is linked to something which we are doing before and after, and each one is quantifiably put there. Now, once that is done, you get a snapshot about what you're doing, how you need to progress, where you need to correct yourself, because the performance is measured, in short. Right? Quality. Focus on excellence, precision, continuous improvement, multi-rater feedback. Multiple points, multiple attributes of rating system is given, and from that, it gave you feedback. You did this job excellently well. The customer was satisfied. On a scale of 1 to 10, he got a satisfaction level of 8.5. Okay. And when you met the customer, your courtesy was very good. The way you were greeting, the way you were you put the salutations, etc. Good morning, good evening. They went off very well. Now, multiple rating may say they'll give a feedback. Right? Now, these are not to be ignored. They have to be understood properly. And being focused on human behavior, they could be subjective when the feedback is being given. But to make that objective, to make it absolutely neutral, one has to make it into measurables. Right? Innovation. It refers employees to be entrepreneurial, creative and proactive, and competency-based goals aligned to company's long-term vision. I mentioned about this in one of the earlier slides, intrapreneurship, I-N-T-R, intra. Intrapreneurships are those, is that type of a process in which the employee who's got an initiative to create something new, who's willing to innovate, who's willing to take a risk, is given the impetus and the push. A PMS system is very, as a fertile ground wherein innovation and entrepreneurship is given a certain type of a push, right? Aligning PM decisions with business strategy, key cultural attributes, taking further customer service. It seeks talent for strong customer relationships, identify top performance, promote teamwork, goals aligned with customer requirements. I don't need to explain further, right? Brand. How does it retain the brand? Deep pride in brand and strong belief in product, team-based goals aligned with multi-vision, multi-rater feedback. Now, in a PMS system, because of whatever the PMS system does, the people have got a sense of belonging and they act like the ambassadors of the organization and they become brand ambassadors. Today, we have got what is called as HR branding. It's there in your HR book. Okay, HR branding means what? The company has got a brand and the HR brands it as one of its pitching for getting candidates into their company, right? Initiatives for performance management and reward strategies implemented. Illustrations. Give out prizes at company-wide celebrations. Some of the things which companies are doing very regularly these days. Use your company communication platform, your intranet and magazines and all that, right? Give continuous spontaneous feedback to people. Make shoutouts at the part of your regular team meetings. When the team meeting is going on, shoutout means what? So-and-so, he has done very well. Come on, give him a hand. You know, we heard about shoutouts in stand-up comedians, right? It's the same thing. You know, you have a shoutout and everybody claps and there's an applause. It feels good for the person who's getting rewarded, right? Have a monthly peer nominated award. Peers are the people who are working at the same level. So at the same level, certain people will be given certain forms to fill up or ask feedback about you at your same level. And they will be nominating you as having done this, having done that. Peer nomination matters a lot. Okay? Thank the employees, family members. Set specific goals and celebrate when they are achieved. Recognize employees, employee wins on social media. The first one I'd like to just thought came to me in one of the IT companies where I've been doing a leadership training. They used to thank the employees, family members by the following process. Suppose XYZ does a good job. There is a handwritten letter by the concerned manager. XYZ's manager will write a handwritten letter, fold it, put it in an envelope, handwritten address, and personally going and deliver to the person's spouse. If it's a person, if it's a man working, it goes to the wife in hand, wherever she is, at home or in her office, and vice versa. Now, this initiative has worked very well in the company because when your spouse gets a letter of appreciation about your other better half in your hands, handwritten, it is very personalized and it's got a lot of emotional content. It goes a long way in making the bonding between the couple very high, A, and also the organization, the person who's working in the organization feels a sense of importance. He feels so nice that the company cares for me and my family. It is psychological, but it's true and it really happens, right? Amplify your employee celebration of each other. Make it sound really big, really gently. I mean, make the person feel really good about him or her. Take advantage of point-based employee engagement platforms and focus on organizational achievements. These are some of the things which we follow. And with this, I conclude this particular PPT. Happy viewing, happy listening. Ponder over these points which I mentioned because they are strategic in nature. They're going to be very helpful when you go up the ladder, regardless of whether you're in HR department or in any other user department. Thank you very much.